Every day, families with critically ill children face the unthinkable, being far from home while their child receives life-saving medical care. Ronald McDonald House Charities Bay Area steps in to ease this burden, providing no-cost housing, free meals, and comprehensive support services to families whose children are being treated at the Bay Area's leading children's hospitals, including Lucile Packard Children's Hospital Stanford and UCSF Benioff Children's Hospitals in San Francisco and Oakland. But we can't do it alone. Your support, through donations or volunteering, helps families stay close to each other and the expert care they need. Visit rmhcbayarea.org to learn how you can make a lasting impact.
The shot, he scores! William Eklund caps an astounding comeback. The Sharks win it!
You're listening to Morning Tide on the Sharks Audio Network. Now, here's your host, Ted Ramey.
Toffoli gets the headman feed, but it's off his stick, and the Flames go back in their own zone. And you can hear the reaction from the crowd here in Calgary as the final 2 seconds ticking off. And that's a long horn for the fans here in the Saddledome. Final score, Calgary 5, San Jose 2. Calgary is now 5-1-3 in their last 9 games. And they keep alive in their playoff hopes while the Sharks' winless streak is now at 0-7-2. The Sharks have been outscored 45-21 in those contests. So, another tough one. They were in it for a while, but the Flames did a really masterful job in the second half of the game.
I mean, it sucks. Giving herself a chance to win, and then, like I said, after the first period, gave up a couple goals that easily preventable, and I mean, all of them, to be honest. It's unfortunate because it seemed like we came out with a really good start, and you know, really wanted to win, and you know, obviously I'm friends with some of those guys over there, but any chance you can eliminate someone from the playoffs, it's exciting, so it sucks.
All right, good morning, everyone. How are we all doing? The San Jose Sharks put forth yet another good effort last night, yet fell short when all was said and done against a Calgary team that, if we are being 1,000% honest, had a whole lot more to play for than San Jose did. And yes, San Jose did have the opportunity to knock them out of the playoffs, but it's the end of a long year. The injuries were adding up as they took two more last night. Jack Thompson and Zach Ostapchuk. It's a difficult situation. I don't think anyone's going to deny that for San Jose. And again, we come back to the reality that for a team like Calgary, they just have a lot more to play for. And Tyler Toffoli talked about it after the game. He said, well, you know, our guys should be desperate as well. We've got guys who are out here trying to fight for jobs, trying to fight for their careers. And that is true, but I always say that is a different mentality that when you are fighting as a collective versus fighting as an individual, that creates two very different dynamics, and the one that is the team dynamic is often the one that is going to win out. It's why one of the things we say in sports is the team that plays like a team is going to have a better chance of winning when all is said and done. But, you know, before we go any further, we got to give our credit to Tyler Toffoli. The guy has been, I would argue, one of, if not the best free agent signing in the history of the San Jose Sharks, just for his consistency, for his overall ability. I mean, this is a guy who, when we try to make the vast comparison to what we hope it will signal 5 years from now, is very much like the Andre Iguodala acquisition for the Golden State Warriors, that it signaled that this was a place to come to, that it signaled that things were changing for the Warriors then, or for the Sharks now, as we make that comparison, and that this is a place that established veterans want to play in their career. And I do believe that is a reality. San Jose, a lot of the big names that have come here, unless they've been homegrown, it's been through a trade, whether it has been a Brent Burns, an Erik Karlsson, a Joe Thornton, right, and an Evander Kane. You know, these guys came here by way of a trade. Brent Burns is another. Dan Boyle is another. We go down the list of all these big-name players who came to San Jose. It was often through a trade that allowed them to come to San Jose, because I think San Jose, you know, it's not one of the original six markets. It's not a big, sexy East Coast team. San Jose, despite being one of the most impactful cities in the nation, is not on the same level as a New York, you know, for instance, or Chicago. It just doesn't hit the same way, even though it is part of a major metropolis, a megalopolis here in the Bay Area. It's just not as much seen as like the destination city to go to. But I will say, once guys get here, they absolutely fall in love, because I think that, like the rest of us know, it's hard to beat living in Northern California. It's hard to beat living in the Bay Area. It's hard to beat living in the South Bay. You get incredible weather. You get an incredible fan base. You get, you know, one of the most electric atmospheres to compete in when the team is good, but you don't get the, you know, obnoxiousness of living maybe in one of those major markets and the media that comes with it. You get respected here in the Bay Area. You don't get hounded. The Bay Area, I've always said, you know, we're cool. We get it. We understand what it means to have superstar athletes. We respect them. We leave them alone. We don't bother them. You know, I can always remember when Steph Curry was living out here in the 925, people would see him out and about. They wouldn't bother him. They would let him and his family do his thing. They would keep out of his way. And now you see a lot of that same thing going on with San Jose. I mean, I'm sure that, you know, the young guys, Macklin and Will, they get a little bit of attention when they're strutting down, you know, in Santana Row. But, you know, for the most part, people steer clear. They let guys have their space. They let guys do their thing. But I think the other part about Tyler Toffoli, as we talk about how the Bay Area gets it, is that Tyler Toffoli has come here and has excelled on a team that is, if you look at the record, at the bottom of the standings. But Tyler Toffoli's numbers did not drop off. He had a third consecutive 30-goal season, and he's still got tonight and then Wednesday night to add a goal or two to that total. That's Tyler Toffoli going to the worst team in the league for the last two seasons and being still the same performer that he was. I think that is indicative of guys viewing the San Jose Sharks as a place they can come to and still have a high-level performance. Because, again, there is the two realities of what's going on in San Jose. On the one hand, they are a team that is at the bottom of the standings. On the other hand, there is the sense that things are changing in San Jose, and hopefully that change will allow the team to be, you know, turning things around sooner rather than later. But yeah, Tyler Toffoli, he has been absolutely phenomenal. Loved seeing him get that 30th goal last year. He almost had another one on top of that. He has been just a dynamite performer. With that, let's get into some of the highlights from last night, because I do have a conversation with Alan Hoshida that I got to about half of yesterday on the buildup that I want people to hear more of today as we talk about the Sharks moving forward in their timeline. But let's hear that Tyler Toffoli goal as he got the Sharks on the board first in this game.
And Barkley just dumps it in deep, and Gregor's giving chase on the right wing boards. Backhands it around as the Sharks change. Carlson on the ice, dropped it back to Toffoli. He's got some room. He walks in, he shoots the save. Toffoli there, he scores! Tyler Toffoli goes top shelf with Dustin Wolf down and out after making the first save. The former Flame makes it 1-0 Sharks at 3:09 of period number one. And how about this? Number 30 for Tyler Toffoli.
Again, a big congratulations to Tyler Toffoli. Three consecutive years of 30 goals. That is a remarkable accomplishment. Lucas Carlson and Noah Gregor get the assist there. It's 1-0 Sharks. But about 6 minutes later, Mackenzie Weegar ties it up for Calgary.
Rebound, Sharks on top of it. Smith is going to poke at it, can't get it. Kovalenko does, he can't clear. Held in by Calgary's Huberdeau. Now to Klapka, now to Weegar. Walks up to the circle, shoots, score! Now the crowd was subdued until that just happened. Mackenzie Weegar, one of the leaders on defense, winding up and blasting it up top to the glove side on goaltender Romanoff. And that happened because the Sharks could not clear the puck. Fabulous slap shot. Klapka gets the primary assist. And it is 1-1 at 9:24 of the first period.
You have got to give a lot of credit to Dustin Wolf at this point as the Flames do come back and tie it at one, because the Sharks really just absolutely just pelted him with shots early on in that period. It was amazing that the Sharks were only up 1-0. And that's something I wanted to point out. Dustin Wolf is going to be a problem going forward. That guy knows what he's doing in front of the net. He is fun to watch. I love that he's from Gilroy. I hate that he's in Calgary, but he is a really, really fun player to watch and seeing the success that he's having. And if he does end up with 30 wins, boy, there is a remarkable argument to be made for him winning the Calder this year. Congratulations to him for getting his 28th win last night. I hate that he's shutting down the Sharks and keeping them to two goals, but you got to give him a lot of credit. And again, he is going to be a problem going forward. Then, about 5 minutes after that game-tying goal for Mackenzie Weegar, it was Adam Klapka making it a 2-1 lead for Calgary.
It's in the offensive end, and Barkley back there along with Bean. Bean gets there first. Good body position by him, and the Flames get it around the boards and skate it out. Thrun, uh-oh, tried to put the check there on Thrun, but Kadri slips by. It's in front. Klapka scores! So Adam Klapka, who scored his first career goal against the Sharks last year and has a goal against them this year before tonight, gets yet another one against the men in teal. For Adam Klapka, that is his fifth goal of the season. A bit of a missed check there by Henry Thrun trying to stop Nazem Kadri, but the wily center iceman got by Thrun, had the puck, and fed it right out in front. No chance. Delandria was the closest guy to Klapka, but Klapka got him to the inside.
2-1 after the first period. Again, Dustin Wolf kept the Flames alive in this game early on when the Sharks were absolutely pelting him left and right. But then 4 minutes and 20 seconds into the second period, the Sharks get a game-tying goal from Jan Ruda, back from injury, making a great play, jumping into the rush, and he gets a game-tying goal for San Jose.
Here's Eklund walking behind the Flames, the net, turning away from Backlund, feeding to Toffoli in the corner, back to Ruda on the point. He shoots, it's blocked. He almost lost it, but he kept it in. Fed it right side in front, backhand shot, Ruda, score! Jan Ruda did a great job to keep that puck in the zone. He fed it down the right to Toffoli, who centered it in the front, and Ruda, after delivering that pass, went straight to the edge of the crease. He got the rebound and knocked it in. Sharks tie it up 2-2.
Feeling good about things at that point, but for once again San Jose, this was yet another game in a season defined by this, where they could not keep it tight, they could not hold on in the third period. A minute 30 in, Sharon Govich makes it a 3-2 game in favor of Calgary.
Sends it across the rink. There's Carlson to the red line. Shoots it forward, but it's off a Flames stick. Sharks changing lines quickly here as the third period still has 18:36 left. Flames head man to the Sharks. Line off a stick. Here's Huberdeau in front. Now Sharon Govich shoots. Score! Yegor Sharangovich scores the 100th goal of his National Hockey League career with a nice hard wrist shot off a broken play in the offensive zone from the right circle that gets by Romanov, and the Flames get the crowd into a tizzy as they take the 3-2 lead at 1:30 of the third period.
Then Coronado made it 4-2 in favor of Calgary.
3-2 the score, Calgary on top in the Shark zone, fed over to the far boards. Coronado, checked by Celebrini, shoots, blocked by his old Harvard teammate Henry Thrun. Centered in front, Coronado a chance, he scored! So right after Henry Thrun blocked that play by Coronado, Coronado gets the puck in front on another broken play from behind the net. A good centering feed from Mikhail Backlund, and he took it off his skate and banged it in past Romanov to make it 4-2 Calgary with 9:05 to go.
And then Sharon Govich would add on an empty netter to make it 5-2, which was good for your final. Let's hear from head coach Ryan Warsawski on what happened in that game.
Obviously, we don't score early. We hand them two goals in that first period after having a really good start, and then we're just a little out of structure on that third goal there early in that third period, and then a couple missed assignments in the D zone.
And he also talked about the impact that Tyler Toffoli has made on this young Sharks team.
Yeah, he's been outstanding for our group. The goal scoring is one thing, but what he does to our dressing room as a leader, helping these young players. As much as Toff wants to score, he wants to win. And that's what we need around here. We need guys that want to win and love to win. More than they hate to, and hate to lose. And that's what Toff's all about.
All right, as promised, I wanted to give you the remainder of the conversation I had with Alan Hoshidi yesterday. If you missed any of this conversation, you can hear the start of it on yesterday's edition of The Build-Up. But we were talking about how it's been overlooked how hyper-competitive both Will and Macklin are. There's been so much focus on the smiles, the laughter, the fun they're having in San Jose. But when you get down to it, these guys want to win, and they absolutely hate losing.
No, and I think we'll see that more next year. I think it's one of those things where everyone, the organization, players, everyone knew where they were at, especially after Mackenzie Blackwood gets traded, and then you have Granlund and you're pulling pieces away. Like the Sharks, they knew at some point, whether they wanted to admit it or not, and you're a professional athlete, you're going out there to win every single game. They're still going to go out and try and win every single game here, the last three, but they know where they're at. And so the pressure to win right now isn't aggressively there. It's not on their shoulders. I think next year, we're going to see a little more pissed off Macklin and Will from the get-go. And hey, we don't want to have this season last year. They probably lost more this year. Not probably. I'm not going out on a limb. They've lost more this year than they ever have in their whole life combined. When they started hockey until last year in NCAA, they have never lost this many games. And that can't be easy for guys who are used to winning. I think that's also part of the rebuild and learning NHL. Is like, you're going to lose games. Like, you're going to lose 20% of your games because of just how it goes. So, I think we're going to see that competitive nature a little bit more next year. We've seen it this year in glimpses, and you saw, I mean, you don't take over a game in the third period against the Wild game, 78, 79 of the season. If you're not really competitive, you don't want to lose. So yeah, they've had fun, but it's just like what we've seen with Joe Thornton is like, he has a ton of fun. He loves hockey. He loves life, but he would call guys out in the dressing room. We heard a lot of that during his number retirement. He'd call guys out. He'd held everyone accountable to a certain standard, and it was business when you stepped on the ice. And I think if they can get guys that can ride that line, that's how you have a winning hockey team and a winning culture, because you can't just be 100%. Oh man, we got to win hockey games. And you can't be 100%. Oh, this is just we're professional athletes. We're playing a boys game. You have to be somewhere in between. You have to love it though. And that's the other thing we talked about with Ovechkin too, is like, you just saw the pure joy. He's 40 years old and he's doing what he's doing.
Yeah.
And you need to have that joy. If you're not, you're not going to have the success that you want to have. If you're approaching this like this is work, you know, I know there's exceptions to that rule, but you got to have some joy in what you're doing.
Do you think that Mike Greer and Joe Will and Ryan Clough and the hockey ops department looked at these trades of the Mikhail Granlund and the Cody Ceci and the Luke Cunning and, you know, going back to Mackenzie Blackwood, not that it was their intent, but do you think they also were saying, let's see how these young players handle this. Let's see how they handle slowly more and more onus being put on them, because it started with Blackwood. And then well before the deadline, it was Granlund and Ceci. And then there was around the deadline, the trades that kept on piling up and really piled up right there at the deadline. But is there a, not that this was the plan, but do you think that there was also a secondary benefit of them seeing like, okay, let's see these guys with the onus on them, with the weight on their shoulders?
Well, I think you have to. I think you have to find out what you have in players and whether if they sink or swim. Like we saw with Colin Graf, they put a lot on his shoulders this year and he's taken it all. He never, it's well documented, never played PK, one of their best penalty killers.
Yeah.
And they've slowly handed this team over to Macklin Celebrini and Will Smith. It's been gradual, but over the last, I'd say a month or so, or, you know, they weren't shy about like, hey, the veterans were like, oh, this is Macklin's team. Like he's the best player. And at some point you need to feel like how does Macklin handle that? How does Will Smith handle that? That now he needs to be a point producer. He's on the top line. They're going up against the other team is going to put out their best defensive team or their best line, whatever it may be, the matchups. So yeah, I think you have to find out what you have. And that only allows you to understand their development a little bit better. You know where they're at. And when you put them under in the scenarios where you are in a real rebuild season, and if the losses pile up, it sucks. And everyone's super competitive in that organization. Mike Greer hates losing. He's talked about it. Ryan Clough is super competitive. We know that. They don't want to lose. But if you put them in the situations where, hey, the outcome is the outcome, but let's see how these guys do. And when they have all that pressure and they're in these scenarios, I think that's good to see. And that's why I keep going back to that Wild game. I think that was one of the most important games for franchise since 2019. I asked you about it, but it's like, you had to see if this team, if these two kids can take over a game, because if they can't take over an NHL game, they will be a very good NHL player, but they won't be the superstars that we come to think of, because superstars take over games when they're asked to. And they took over a game. And I know it's just one game and we have to see it more, but you have to do it once to do it twice. And so that's why I go back to that game and being a huge pivotal point, because I think if Mike Greer and Ryan Clough, the brain trust, is looking at that game, they're like, oh yeah, okay, they could take over an NHL game. And the Wild had to win that game. It wasn't the Sharks didn't have to win that game. The Wild did. And so for them to take over that third period in a must-win game for the opponent, I think even speaks even more volumes. And you don't get to that point if Granlund's still on the team, right?
Yeah.
You don't get you the lines, those two guys are split up. So to your point, I think they had to be in those situations. And they've answered almost every call this season.
At some point, we are going to see a change in captaincy. You know, whether or not Logan Couture comes back, whether or not he's on long-term IR next year, at some point down the line, that's going to change. I know that we talk about Connor McDavid being an incredibly young captain in the NHL, which is, to me, especially pressure-packed when you're playing in Canada. Do you want a bridge captain in between, or do you want to establish as young or as early as possible that this is Macklin Celebrini's team?
I think that has to do with what contract they give him. Hmm. If they give him a 10-year, they max him out 10 years, he's going to be here for 10 years. Give him the captaincy. It's his team, right? Like, if for some reason, we've seen it where teams have tried bridge deals. I don't think you should try that with Macklin Celebrini. I think you should just lock him up.
Yeah.
But if there is a bridge deal there and you like a 6-year, 7-year, then maybe you have the interim or the bridge. Sorry. Yeah. You know, Tyler Toffoli has been great for the guys. Right. Mario Ferraro is also a guy that seems to grow into his leadership abilities and taking steps in that situations. I personally think he's your franchise player. Guys are going to default to him anyways. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, Tyler Toffoli has already said multiple times in post-game interviews, he's our best player.
Yeah.
So it also almost seems like you're undermining your captain if you don't give it to him.
True. But it is. I mean, even let's say that Logan, you know, is on long-term injury for however long. Whenever that captaincy changes, you're still looking at a guy who's, what, at that point, 21, 22? I mean, that's incredibly young for a captain.
Yeah, but incredibly young, and it gives you your franchise stability. I mean,
yeah,
I think he's shown that he can deal with it. I mean, he's 18 and doing what he does in the NHL now. In 3 years from now, you think, I think he's going to be even more steady and more secure in that, and let him find that other portion of himself where he's leading the way. And in 3 years, if you're talking that far down the road, Toffoli's in his last year of this contract at that point. Yeah. We don't know if Mario will be around at that point, because he's coming up on his last year of his deal. Now, if they're around, then yeah. But I think you almost have to. Like, I think you should give them both A's next year.
Yeah.
I think you put letters on their chest next year and start teaching them how to be part of that leadership group. And honestly, if you didn't, like, the Sharks have had such a good plan with these guys. Like, if you didn't see them to be long-term answers for extended period of time, why give them Thornton and Marlowe to live with? Guys, both were captains. Yeah. They both went through times where their captaincies were taken away from them, where there was adjusted. And like, that's also part of it is you. I also think the Sharks have had a weird history with their captaincy, right? Like, if we go back, like, Marlowe had it, and then they took it away. It was Thornton. And then there was that period of time where it was like, they didn't know what to do because they weren't winning, and they needed to put some ownership somewhere. Someone had to lay on the sword, so to speak. Let's not have that drama. Let's just give it to the guy that we know, that everyone knows is going to be your franchise piece for the next 10 years, 10, 15 years. I mean, he's 18. He could be 20 years. and just let him ride and let him be your foundation, and let him control the dressing room. Yeah. I think that's Steven Stamkos is a great example of that, is he controlled the dressing room. And that's why so many guys loved him in Tampa, is because what he did as the captain, obviously what he did as a player too, but it's what you do behind the scenes. I think that's the biggest thing for the captain. And I know going long on this, but
no, it's interesting.
You know, like, everyone wants to talk about what the captain does on the ice.
Yeah.
I don't, maybe that's 30% of that guy, that person's job. Most of the captain stuff, most fans are never going to see.
Yeah.
They're the ones who stand up when you're having a bad period, a two period or bad stretch. And they're the ones who, you know, rattle or not, or know what the temperature of the dressing room is and what to say at that point. They're the ones who welcome in the new guys. Like, the captain is so much more important for the functionality of the dressing room and the players than just what they do on the ice. So I think there's a reason to let him start learning all of that early on. And then, so when he's in his prime, he's not learning how to do that. And he's just, it's just his boat, his ship.
To your point, Alan, I mean, when we saw the jumbo retirement stuff earlier this year, there was talk about his play on the ice, but the majority of it was Thornton, who he was off the ice, the things he was doing when the cameras weren't rolling, the way that he would settle the bus, you know, the way that he would, you know, if the guys were down, he would, you know, bring things back up or bring things to an appropriate level. Like, to your point, it is all those off ice things, which is, and I'm just playing devil's advocate, that's why it is so much to ask of a, you know, a young kid, whatever age we, you know, would presume that Macklin would take over the captaincy. That's still an incredible amount of responsibility, but I feel like we did see that with, you know, the way he handled the Luke Schumann situation, which is, dude, imagine being 18 years old and being like, yeah, you're this kid's hero. Like 18 year old me, I don't know how I would have handled that. That's an incredible amount of, you know, pressure to put on your shoulders. And then he goes, you know, to that kid's hometown and puts out the best performance of his career in front of that kid after he has his make-a-wish here in San Jose. And that's storybook. That's Babe Ruth stuff. That's the story you hear growing up, you know, and he goes out there and does it. And he's already got that handled. I mean, that's the thing is like everything about Macklin Celebrini with the dad who is the professional athlete, to your point, Alan, it suggests that he's ready for this. And why not? Right.
Right. But to your also, you know, let's play the devil advocate. Logan Couture is battling through a huge injury for himself. Yeah. And he's probably going through a lot more like the weight of his career is probably on his shoulders. And so he hasn't been around the team as much this year to show Macklin what a captain is supposed to do right now. Like just because he's going through his own stuff, he's going through his own rehab and he's trying to take care of himself as well. But to your point, he hasn't seen what the example of a day-to-day captain looks like in the NHL, you know, and that's nothing. I'm not taking anything away from Logan Couture because he's battling back from an injury and he's doing whatever he needs best for himself. But also to your point, there hasn't been that example in the dressing room daily. So he also, in some ways, doesn't know what the captaincy looks like on a daily basis inside that dressing room.
Yeah. No, it's interesting, man. And like, this is what I always talk about, because sometimes people, you know, will be critical of Logan for not being around that much. And I always wonder if, you know, that's him being like, well, you know what, I want to be hands off because I don't want to, if I'm not playing, I can see Logan be one of those hyper competitive guys who would feel awkward just being on the sidelines and still trying to lead. But when Logan was back last year on a really bad Sharks team, they went 4-1-1, man. In six games, they went 4-1-1. And that's, to me, you know, if you want to think about anything about how important Logan Couture is out there on the ice in terms of the totality of his game, that was a historically bad team last year in terms of their goal differential. You know, one of the worst teams in the last, you know, 10, 15 years in the NHL. Logan Couture gets back for six games. They win four of them and get a point in five of them. Like, that should not be overlooked.
That also means it shows you how much respect those guys have for 39 and what they want to play for their captain. It also shows you the importance of your captain. If people don't understand how much a C means to a player, to a team, like just point to those six games. He came back and the Sharks were a different team. It also slots people into where they're supposed to slot. I think so much fans forget this is if people are playing out of their position or out of where they're supposed to, where their floor is or where their floor is.
Yeah.
Then they can't produce they can't be the best player they should be because they're being asked to do too much. And so Logan came back and it slotted everyone back to where they needed to go. And if Logan came back and had some miracle, like we see with Landeskog, right?
Yeah, Landeskog.
If he comes back and he's has that story and he comes back and he's even at this point, you know, is a third line center or a second or third line center, because Macklin's your first line center, right? At this point, if he comes back and he's your second or third line center, or even just the guy that you can rely upon in penalty kills in big situations. And he's also a no BS guy. Like he's not, sometimes we've seen this season, like guys get run or whatever it may be, you know, thrown into the boards. Like your captain's not going to let that happen. And I think, you know, I think that's where players, they see their captain and him coming back in that room. I also think it brings a level of, prominence because Logan has been around for everything he'd been around for the good days. He's been around through the tough times, but they can ask him, oh, what was it like when the tank was rocking? You know, they had Vlasic there and they have Ferraro. There was 1 year and, you know, they have some guys that were kind of there, but Logan was a homegrown guy.
Yeah.
You know, and he had a lot of expectations on him too. And he's an all-star. Like he can mean so much for those players. And so if he does come back, if we see like a Gabriel Landeskog situation next year, man, I think it would be a huge boost to the San Jose Sharks.
All right, we are out of time, but I'll be back with you this afternoon as we get set for the San Jose Sharks to take on Vancouver. Second to last game of the year, 6:30 pre, 7 o'clock go time, right here on the Sharks Audio Network. For the San Jose Sharks, I'm Ted Ramey, signing off.
This podcast can be found on demand anytime on the Sharks Plus SAP Center app. All music by Yogi Yend.